Section, National Council of Jewish Women, October 12, 1987. Harold Kimball and Ann Fagan interviewing Mr. Lester Hamburg, Tape 1, Side 1. Again, Mr. Hamburg, please, your full name, your address, and date of birth.
My full name is Lester Albert Hamburg. I go by Lester A. Hamburg. I don't use the Albert. I used the A because my father was always Elmer A. Everybody called him E.A. I live at 5564 Northumberland Street, Pittsburgh 15217. And I was born August 23rd, 1916 in Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay, let's begin by talking about your childhood, your memories of life with your parents, life as a young boy growing up in Pittsburgh.
I remember faintly my very, very young years, but I don't even remember where we lived. It was probably somewhere in the Hill District. But I do remember living at 305 North Myrtland Street, where I entered Sterrett School. One of the few Jewish families in that part of the city at that time. Interesting enough, the other Jewish family was the Goldstein family, who you now know as Frieda Shapiro, Frieda Goldstein Shapiro, and of course David Shapiro, Frieda's son, and so forth. We were the only Jews in Sterrett School.
This would have been when? Early 20s, Mr. Hamburg? Can you pinpoint the day?
Well, I was born in 16, and you'd go to probably start when you're 6 years of age to school, so it was probably 1922.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you have any special memories of that school?
I liked the school very much. There was some anti-Semitism there. Particularly a fellow by the name of Jay Steele. I still remember the name. Because I remember once he finally pushed me too far and I beat him up. And the funny thing, after I became a member of the board of Pittsburgh National Bank, Jay Steele's name came up for a bank loan.
Uh-huh.
Which is the way the wheel makes a full turn.
Yes.
There was nothing wrong with his credit, and hopefully he is no longer bigoted, but I know we gave him his loan, but isn't that, interesting aside.
Interesting memory.
But there was some anti-Semitism there. I remember I was too far away from any synagogue, and my parents, of course, wanted me to be bar mitzvahed. So an old gentleman by the name of Weinstein used to come to the house to give me lessons. For my bar mitzvah, I can't remember how many days a week he came. All I remember, he always had terrible breath. I do remember some things from those years.
Yeah.
I made some friends in those days, obviously non-Jewish friends, and some of them I still see. Mary Jane McCutcheon, who married Dr. Bill Guy, who recently married the former chairman of the board of the Union National Bank. His name escapes me at the moment. He recently retired. But there were a few people like that. From Myrtland Street, we moved to Garina Road, and I think that was about 1929. Might be in the early 30s. Now, for the first time I lived in a Jewish neighborhood, it was kind of like my first trip to Israel. All of a sudden, I wasn't all by myself.
Yes.
And Rosh Hashanah was celebrated by my peers.
Your memories of your parents during those early years, I'm sure they had a very strong
influence. Well, of course, my memories of my parents, like any child, are all good. My mother was sick quite a bit.
Mm.
She suffered from migraine headaches, and then from the headaches she eventually developed what they, in those days, said was gallbladder, but it ended up being a malignancy.
Mm.
So she was never a real well woman. She's very attractive, and I have some wonderful pictures of her. my father and I, of course, were in business together for many years, and he founded this business, and we like to think we built it together.
Well, your parents.
And I learned from my father the importance of being involved in the community. My father was not a college graduate. I think he only went to about the 10th grade in high school, but he was an excellent speaker. One year gave a speech in Atlantic City to the American Bankers Association on what we now call floor planning, some sort of, I don't know what they call it in those days. He also reacted to the Divine Providence Hospital. The sisters would never have a meeting unless Dad was going to be able to be in town. And recently they tried to get me interested. A friend of mine from the Children's Hospital went over to Divine Providence, so he called and said he was going through old records and found that my father was on the board and so forth. And I told him I well remembered, and I remembered all the sisters coming in mass to my father's funeral. But I appreciated his interest in my coming, but I had all the hospital boards that I could handle.
Were your parents Pennsylvanians, or had they come?
My mother and my mother's parents, interesting enough, were born in the United States. I don't know whether it was New York or Pittsburgh. My father's parents were born in the old country. I, of course, remember all my grandparents on both sides. Nothing outstanding about any of them. Grandpa Margolis, which was my mother's maiden name, at one time had a business which he handled charge accounts for the department stores. Believe it or not, the department stores didn't carry their own accounts. Eventually they became intelligent enough to know that they should carry their own accounts, that there was much better if they controlled it. And I suspect that Grandpa Margolis must have made some money by taking that business. And there he went in the liquor business, wholesale, and of course did fine until Prohibition. After that, I think he went downhill till he died. I never heard anything very exciting about him. Found some notes of his on my dad's safety deposit box when he died, so he couldn't have been doing anything great.
You must have some memories of the Depression
memories
of the Depression in Pittsburgh as a young man. And
how it affected you. I remember very well. I can remember we lived when we used to come downtown. Of course, there were men selling apples, and the police often take the train when we lived in Myrtle Street up in the Homewood Station. We would get off the old at the Pennsylvania Station. But I remember the Depression, and remember the big flood in 1936. Of course, by that time I was a grown-up adolescent. Depression has left an effect on me. So many of Dad's friends were adversely affected. People are all gone now. Dr. Albert Wise, who was a big stockholder in the old Pittsburgh State Bank. Emanuel Dim, who was president of the Pittsburgh State Bank, which I think was the first Jewish bank, at least the first one I was aware of. These people are in trouble. I know my dad helped Dr. Wise out to save him, because in those days, if you were a bank stockholder, they could take everything you had to make up whatever the losses were, I think. So, yes, I remember that, but I started to tell you it had an effect on me. I'm very conservative. You're looking at a big, rather big, privately owned company, owes no money, no mortgages, no bank loans, no debt. I will not go beyond what I can pay for.
Yeah.
And that's a scar from my Depression years.
Yes.
Because I can well remember people coming to Dad's house, desperate. Didn't know where they were going to go to salvage their. These were people at one time were wealthy people. So it was a traumatic experience, and I was old enough to remember it.
That's a significant point, that it's really affected your whole business philosophy.
Can I inject a question? How was the Jewish community faring during the Depression? Were they hit any differently than the rest of the community? Most of them should have been in business.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
It would have to be a guess on my part. I would suspect that they suffered the same as everybody else. There'd be no reason. They didn't suffer as much as the Duquesne Club Ritz.
Right.
But they suffered as much as the middle class entrepreneur.
Right.
In those days, whatever you were doing and so forth. All things were, the Depression treated everybody equally.
Did your father talk with you when you were a young boy about business? How did you become interested in his life,
yes,
and his business?
He talked to me a great deal about business. The business was growing, and he always indicated that he would like me to take over the business. There were times I wasn't sure. There were times that psychiatrically it bothered me. My father was a very dynamic man, and I remember once I went and talked to our family doctor. I don't think they had psychiatrists in those days. I'm sure I needed one. But I did talk to him about the feeling of insecurity, and so I think he gave me spring tonic, whatever they gave in those days, some nonsense. But the fact that I had to fill his shoes bothered me very much. Believe it or not, it was World War II that corrected that situation. I know we're jumping all over the place.
It's okay.
But because of my ears, which were bad since I was an 8-year-old, from an overdose of quinine for pneumonia, we're going back before any of the penicillins, or let alone sulfur. But my hearing was always bad, not as bad as it is now. But when it came time to get in the service, I volunteered for the Navy, figuring that was going to be a place that was in keeping with my dignity, and went down to Bainbridge, Maryland. Of course, they threw me out completely. And we got into some manufacturing company, and I got involved with them for something to do. This company was drying up. And during the war, I ran a company of over 2,500 people at 21 and 22 and 23 years of age, with all the priorities and secret documents and so forth that went with it, and without my father. And all of a sudden, I found I was running a bigger business than he ever ran, and I ran to Washington and visited with generals and colonels and admirals, and I was big shot.
And you were really just a boy at the time.
I'd use a good Jewish word for what I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it made a big difference, Harold, psychiatrically or psychologically, for me to take over the business in later years.
What age were you then?
Pardon?
What age were you at that time? About?
I think when I tried to get in the Navy, I was either 19 or 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sure.
So you were really a boy yourself still running this company. Had you, as a younger boy, when you were thinking about college and education, other aspirations than business? Had you been thinking in other directions?
Not really. I liked the business. I enjoyed coming down. My father was a disciplinarian. For example, when a lot of my friends, most of them came from families of better than average income, Jewish families, were going to Camp Red Feather and Greystone or whatever they call them. My father said, you don't have to go to camp, you can go down and work.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work in the warehouse and work on the trucks and so forth. I never did go to camp. It had some good side effects later in later years when I would be handling the union contracts in the warehouse and the trucks. They were often the men that I used to ride with.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they've all retired or died since then. But we had a good relationship. But he was anxious that I take over the business.
About your educational background, did you go to school locally? Your educational background, did you go to university locally?
I went locally because it was the Depression and all my friends were going locally.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm sure the family could have afforded to send me anywhere, and my grades were good. I don't remember, I think I came out of all days with honors.
Uh-huh. You went to Pitt then, did you?
I went to Pitt. Uh-huh. And in my sophomore year, became president of Phi Epsilon Pi, which is a little bit unusual.
Yes.
Forgive a self-serving statement. And built that fraternity up to probably the biggest on the campus of its type. And a lot of those friends are still my friends today with their wives. In fact, a couple of weeks ago I had a party at my house for all my friends who had reached their 70th birthday in 1987. And I had the married ones, of course, brought their wives. And the children, in some instances, they're adolescent grandchildren. Oh. We didn't bring any babies. And Concordia Club did the party, and it was very, very, very nice.
So there are friends who go back to your university days.
I pride myself in keeping my friends.
Yes.
Some of them are retired from other jobs, and I brought them in here to keep them busy.
Hmm. Excuse me. I just couldn't help myself. If I forgot that question, what subjects did you take at Pitt? Anything in particular?
Well, I took some business subjects, but I took a lot of cultural subjects. I was a good writer and still am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, are you allowed to self-serve when you
absolutely
get paid?
Absolutely. That goes with the territory.
When they have a tough letter to write here, or a bulletin, they still come to the old senior chairman.
So writing
I took
is
a lot
important.
Of English. Some
good.
Of my themes were in the book they published.
Uh-huh.
I hope they still publish.
Oh, yes, they do.
I took a lot of history. Took some accounting, but didn't like it as well. And I'm sorry I didn't take more. I particularly missed it when I became on the bank board.
Were there people at the university who impressed you particularly? Any faculty people? Anybody there who made an impression on you?
I had some people at Stair School that I remember very well. There was a Miss Hawkins, was an old maid that was excellent on grammar. I remember we used to diagram sentences. I think my first love was a Miss Dunn. It's funny how you remember these names.
Yes.
At Alderdice, my homeroom teacher, Garrett Thorne, was a great guy. I'm sure he's dead. I often thought of, when I became successful, looking him up and see how he was faring and try to be helpful to him. But he was such a heavy smoker, I'm sure he's gone for many, many years. Of course, I remember Rose Hart. Does that name ring a bell with you?
Yes. Yes.
I enjoyed my school years. I had a lot of good friends, was active. I was much more active at Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved with everything, almost to the point where I had to curtail a little bit because my grades were starting to suffer. But I'd say that I got as much education from my extracurricular activities as I did from my extracurricular.
Yes. Yes. Tell us about your coming in and taking over this business during the war and how that all began.
Well, that wasn't this business. It was another business. We had a man working for us by the name of Ralph Silverman, and he had invented a portable amplifier,
mm-hmm.
which you see everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some. He had developed it for the old Pittsburgh Railways Company to try to convert to one-man streetcar and be able to work this some way and say, Murray Avenue or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he somehow met Mrs. Roosevelt, who was developing Arthurdale, West Virginia, which was supposed to be, she and Mrs. Morgenthau were developing this utopia where they took the indigent coal miners from Scott's Run and gave them an acre of ground or two, it must be more than that, maybe an acre or two, some chickens and a cow and a root cellar and a rather nice house. But then she had to find something for them to do, so she built the factories there, but there was nothing in the factories. And she sold Ralph Silverman on the idea that she would open doors for him, and this was before there was any war declaration. to get some of these things made. And I think the opening order was for around 1,300 pieces, and that's when I started to get involved. And after Ralph Silverman, we called him Silverman Manufacturing. And then, of course, it grew into all sorts of other kind of things. And these were marvelous people. We were in Arthurdale, West Virginia. They worked in their bare feet. We were doing secret work, and we were supposed to check these people out. My God, they went back to the Revolutionary War, and they were so patriotic that to even question them was an offense.
You lived down there, did you, while you were doing this?
I had a house down there with several engineers from here. Some of them went home on the weekend. I had a secretary from Hamburg Brothers that I was down there with. It was quite an experience.
Did you meet Mrs. Roosevelt ever?
Saw quite a bit of Mrs. Roosevelt.
Really?
I remember once she used to come down and visit. And I remember once she came and I was getting ready she was the wife of the president.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting properly dressed. Most of the time I was casual. And I was home, and she was not expected maybe for 45 minutes or an hour, and I was in my underwear. There was a knock on the door, so I said, well, come in. So who walks in with Mrs. Roosevelt? Well, she said, she said, Mr. Hamburg, I have raised how many boys I can get them. So please be relaxed. So I ran in the cover of the room, and sat in the bed and talked. But we had a nice relationship. And
I take it you respected the lady, did you?
I respected her very, very much. In fact, she was not a beautiful lady physically, but she was so beautiful throughout. Yeah. That after you got to know her, you mm-hmm. thought she was beautiful. Mm-hmm. She was a fine lady and very bright.
Yes.
And of course, now that I read about her, I knew all the things she was going through with him and so forth.
Yes.
Very interesting. But I have to go back to one little anecdote on it's not going to mean a thing in your archive.
Sure it will. Sure it will.
But as we got into more and more production of secret items, the government, typical, said, well, you have to wire to fence up your whole plants.
Mm-hmm.
And we had taken over building after building there, including some of the school buildings.
Mm.
And we were running buses as far as Fairmont, West Virginia, to bring people, mostly women, of course, and elderly men.
You were employing how many people about
2,500
at this time?
On, we had on the... On,
that was a
on,
big
we were
operation.
Working around the clock.
Yeah.
Received an award as the best smaller war plant between New York and Chicago.
Huh.
We have pictures of all the Army Navies and all that. Huh. But anyways, they decided that we had to hire guards and buy them guns. Well, they all had guns down in West Virginia. So anyways, we did all this. And they said they were sending up some personnel, Army personnel, Signal Corps, to check out my people and their use of firearms. And they were coming up from Pittsburgh. So one morning, about 10, 11 o'clock for appointment, the two kids came up my age, very young or possible, to check out my guards. Well, my guards were elderly men. The younger ones they'd volunteered from Pearl Harbor on. And while they're talking to my men and my guards, a rabbit came out. We're in the country. And my guard pulled the gun, aimed at the rabbit. It wasn't, terribly far, but it was enough that that kid never could kill the rabbit.
Test.
I was just coming out, and I said, what do you want to do with your men? And with my men, he said, we're turning around, we're going home.
That's a good story. Good story.
These are real mountaineer people.
Yeah, and here you were.
I still remember that.
Yeah.
About reminiscing.
A young Jewish city boy in the middle of all these mountaineers.
I headed up the United Way for the whole county, because I was the biggest employer in the county.
Yeah.
So this got me started into things that later on led to the presidency of the United Way here.
How long did the business go on, the West Virginia business?
Well, after the war, I tried to get out of there as quickly as I could. Contracts had to be watered down, and there was a tremendous amount of raw material, millions of dollars worth. But as soon as I could get out, I did, and I sold it. To, I don't even remember who.
Did the community that Mrs. Roosevelt had hoped to create continue? What happened
to that
community? Oh, yes,
and I think there's still some industry up there. Like Sterling Faucet's up there now. They came up in the late years when we were winding down. And a fellow named Ruby, R-U-B-Y, he may be dead by now, I don't know. God, my memory's not that bad, is it?
Your memory's very good.
Very good.
It's excellent.
Were you very close to Wheeling, West Virginia?
What about Wheeling?
Were you very close to it, wherever you were?
We were close to Morgantown.
Mm. Oh, I know where that is. That's east of
Wheeling. We had a branch in Wheeling.
I see.
Hamburg Brothers.
That's right.
So you came back then from that operation and into the business here.
I came in here, right.
And this would have been,
this
would have been about when? What year about? 45?
It was over in 45.
Well, I didn't come back for 45, 46.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of other memories of those war years as a young man watching the world turn upside down, memories of that?
Not
your
too many. For one thing, you know, I was in the, really in the boondocks.
Yeah.
I often wonder why I didn't know more that was going on against the Jews. Was that true around here, too?
Sure,
do you know that?
It probably was.
I was not aware of the things we now, you know, classify under the Holocaust.
Right. Well, being in the Army as I was, we didn't know a thing about it.
There you are.
And we were supposed to be fighting Hitler, but we never knew a thing about what happened to the Jews.
I would assume there were no other Jewish families in this West Virginia community or no other Jewish contacts for you.
The only Jews that I knew were from Clarksburg, West Virginia. People by the name of, she was a broider from Parkersburg, and her name was Cone, and they had a ladies' store there, and I used to see them socially once in a while. That was the only Jewish contact I had. I had a lot of non-Jewish friends that I maintained until they died, including the head of the draft board up there, because I always had people that I'd like to continue with, some trained engineers, but eventually you'd lose them, but they'd give me another 6 months to look for a replacement and so forth.
As you look back on it, you think those years really gave you training in management. Was that the value primarily of those years, confidence?
Oh, I think it gave me fabulous training in management, fabulous training. I had a union. These people came from coal mining family. We had District 50. Everybody, I didn't have it in the beginning, but when we got so big, they saw 2,500 people. That's more people than work in a big coal mine. They finally organized the place, and so I had the experience of negotiating labor contracts. Mm-hmm. Everything is a, you know, is a pipsqueak.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But I had a good relationship, and I learned that the best way to handle labor, particularly the labor bosses, was to sit around and be friendly with them, go out and have a beer, don't talk down to them, and so forth. And for many years, I don't do it much anymore. We have Teamsters in our warehouse. The contracts were talked about right here at the bar here. And I always kept a good relationship with labor. I mean, I never waited till contract time to maybe take my steward to the Duquesne Club. I've never been ashamed to take him. He said, "You sure you want to take me to Duquesne Club?" I said, "Why not? You're as good as anybody else in that club." And I'd take the head of Local 636 maybe a year before the contract was up. I don't know whether it gave me any edge, but it gave me a friendly atmosphere to discuss the things. And this I learned from West Virginia.
Yeah. Okay, let's pick it up with your return to Pittsburgh after the war and coming into business with your father. What do you recall
of
those days?
Well, I worked for a fellow named Harold Kay, who's pictured down the lobby, and he was our vice president in charge of sales and a marvelous salesman. And I don't know the chronological order of things, but he was my boss. and I respected him as such. We were good friends.
You were in sales then when you first came back? Or
pardon?
When you first came into the business, you were involved primarily in sales?
I was in the business before the war. I came into business in 1938 when I came out of college.
Okay.
I was in our old Victor record department for a while, and then 39-40 I left the business. But I spent at least a year or two in the business in our Victor record division. And the reason I was in that division, my father didn't understand it. He didn't understand it, and he thought that was the best place for me to go to learn something about something he didn't have understand or have the patience for. And I've always had a feel for that. We've gone in and out. When RCA went back into the video discs, we were the biggest in the United States in it. Other distributors failed in it, but I was educated in that, and we did well with it. And then getting back to your question, we had RCA by that time, or did we? I don't know. I'd have to. I think we did. It's not too important. Mm-hmm. We had. My father had a very good knack for knowing when to change lines. Uh-huh. One time we were the distributors for Majestic. Does that ring a name and bell with you?
With
at
me,
all?
It does. I lost money in it.
You have the stock Reesby Greeno.
Someone in our family put some money in it.
Why don't you?
They went broke.
Yeah, they went broke. But at one time, they were the largest selling radio line.
That's true.
And we had Servel Electrolux, a gas refrigerator.
That.